There are 39 milahot, which constitute forms of work forbidden on the Sabbath. It's the why behind the way we do the things we do. Join Rabbi Moshe Schnurb now for Hilchos Shabbos, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is Soul to Soul on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kishis, Parshas Pekudei, Tav Shin Pei Daled. Purim is just 1 week away, and a warm welcome to all of our radio family. Thank you so much for joining us today as we try to inspire ourselves, try to get ready for another beautiful Shabbos Kodesh by looking into the Parsha, by trying to get some inspiration, by trying to learn some lessons of the Torah, and hopefully have something that we can then say over, we can then share with our family and friends on the walk to shul, on the way home from shul, at the Shabbos table. Talk Torah on Shabbos. Such an important thing to do. As always, the Seer today is sponsored as a Refuah Shlema for Gadi Daron Chaim Ben Kayla Avram Ben Golda Yosef Gershon Ben Taiba Gad Ben Felicity Leza Yitzchok Ben Zlata Esther and Ben Tzion Ben Chaya Mushka. May they and all the other Shoch Shar Kolisa, may all the other Cholim in Klaisel glean from the Schus of our Lima Torah together, and Bez Hashem, have quickly, a Refuah Shlema, mamish, b'korov, in every facet, Refuah Sanefesh, Refuah Saguf, physical, emotional, hakara. Eile fukudeya mishkan, mishkan ha'edus. This is the reckoning of the Mishkan. So, what appears to be a very sad commentary on the nature of people is actually Hashem's way of rewarding the righteous. The Parsha begins with Moshe Rabbeinu's accounting of all the precious metals and jewelry that Klai Yisrael donated for the construction of the Mishkan. Why did Moshe do such an accounting? Was he not trustworthy? Unquestionably, Hashem trusted Moshe, knowing that his integrity and devotion were impeccable, right? Some disturbed people in every community have nothing else to do but to denigrate their leaders, right? This is unfortunately the product of envy, which is espoused by insecure individuals who look at themselves and see a kind of a wretched example of someone who could have been a successful person. Regrettably, as noted in the Medrash Shmos Rabbah, Moshe heard some scoffers speaking behind his back, claiming that he had become wealthy through the contributions to the Mishkan. They kind of asserted in a not so subtle manner that he had sort of skinned off the top. What is most shocking about this is that Hashem himself had attested to Moshe's integrity. Rav Moshe Sternberg Shlita suggests that specifically because of Moshe's greatness, Hashem orchestrated this slander to reward him. The Sfarim, the Magen Meshorim, right, contend that when one speaks evil, right, Lashon Hara, against his fellow, so the victim receives all of the zechuyos, the merits that the offender possessed, and the offender, in turn, receives all of the victim's averus. Orchas Tzadikim, in Shar Anova, relates that a person once slandered a righteous man. The victim sent a gift to the offender in return for the merits that he had just received, which had once been the slanderer's own merits. When the Yom HaDin, the day in which we will all stand before the heavenly tribunal to give an accounting of our lives arrives, we will be surprised at the many, many merits that have accrued from those who have spoken derogatorily about us. Likewise, we will have shocked by the many sins that have resulted when the coin is sort of flipped and we have been the ones who were the slanderers. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with much, much more.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh Pashas Pekudei Tav Shin Pei Dalel. As you prepare for another beautiful Shabbos Kodesh, Baruch Hashem, Ashrei Shezochinu, we merited to survive another week and be able to enjoy another beautiful Shabbos Kodesh. So Baruch Hashem, next week is Purim Bezer Hashem, and Bezer Hashem will devote next week's show to talking about Purim. But let's take the opportunity and talk a little bit about the Mishkan of Moshe Rabbeinu. And of course, the parsha begins. Eile fekudei amishkan mishkan hoedus, asher pukar al pi Moshe. This is the accounting of the Mishkan of testimony, that was ordered by Moshe to be counted. The work of the Levim, overseen by Isamar, the son of Aaron HaKohen. Now, in his own kind of inimitable way, Rashi explains the repetition. Why does it say, Eile fekudei amishkan? Mishkan ha'edus. Why do I repeat it twice? So he says this word Mishkan is stated twice as an allusion to the Mikdash, which was taken as collateral, right? A mashkan in Lashon HaKodesh is something that's taken as a pledge, as a collateral, right? In the two churbanos, the two destructions on account of the sins of Klal Yisrael. And of course, this is based in the Medrash. The Medrash says, why is the word Mishkan written twice? So Rabbi Shmuel Bar Marta said, because it was taken as collateral two times because of them, the sins of Klal Yisrael. This is the meaning of that which the Anshe Knesa Gedolah said, Pasuk in Nehemiah, we have given you a collateral, for we have not observed the mitzvahs and the precepts and the laws you commanded your servant Moshe. Right? What is the significance of the double expression? Right? It says, chovol chovalnu, double collateral. It alludes to the fact that it, the Beis HaMikdash, was taken as a collateral twice. Two Beis HaMikdash were destroyed. The term chavol, right, refers exclusively to a collateral, as it says, the Poskin, in Devarim, Lo Savoya Beisai Lavoid, you cannot take a upper or lower stone as a collateral. Therefore, it's written, these are the accountings of the Mishkan of testimony, with the term Mishkan mentioned twice. Now, this is very, very surprising. After all, Parshas Pekudei is the fifth and last of the Parshas detailing the construction of the Mishkan and all of its vessels. There was Truma, there was Tzaveh, there was Kisisa, there's Vayakel, and now Pekudei. Yet, specifically in the opening Pasuk, which extols the virtues of Moshe Rabbeinu, who oversaw the construction of the Mishkan, there the HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose to inform us with a repetition of the term Mishkan, that he was destined to take away the two Batei Mikdash as collateral. Furthermore, the Mishkan itself, built by Moshe Rabbeinu in the Midbar, we know was never destroyed and was not taken as a collateral even once. Only the first Beis HaMikdash, built by Shlomo HaMelech, and the second Beis HaMikdash, built by Ezra HaSefer, were taken as collaterals. So why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu to allude this here at the completion of the building of the Mishkan? Furthermore, how are we to make sense of the continuation of the Pasuk? Asher Pukad al Pi Moshe. Was this double collateral taken because Moshe ordered the accountings? Doesn't make sense. So let's start by shedding perhaps a little bit of light on the subject by introducing a teaching from Chazal. Now, it was impossible, we know, for Yisrael's enemies to capture or destroy the Mishkan because it was the handiwork of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's why the Gemara says in Saita that there was a drasha, a maid by Rav Chanina Bar Papa. She explained, what is the meaning of that which is written, a pasuk in Tehillim, Lamed Gimel? Ranenu tzadikim Hashem, Vayisharim nava sehila. Sing joyfully, tzadikim, because of Hashem. Right? For the upright, praise is fitting. And the Medrash says, don't read it as praise is fitting, but rather as a palace of praise. This refers to Moshe and David, for their enemies did not gain control of their handiwork. Of David, it's written, Pasuk in Eicha, its gates sunk in the earth. Regarding Moshe, the master said, when the first Mikdash was built, the Ohel Moed was hidden. Its beams, its hooks, its bars, its pillars, and its sockets. The Gemara goes on to inquire where the components of the Mishkan were hidden. And the Gemara says, Rav Chista said, in the name of Avimi, under the tunnels of the Heichal. We're dealing a lot with tunnels these days. In the tunnels under the Heichal. So we learn an incredible, incredible Chiddush. The Mishkan that Moshe Rabbeinu built in the Midbar remains hidden beneath the tunnels of the Heichal of the first Beis HaMikdash built by Shlomo HaMelech. It also remained there when the second Bayis was built, and it remains there until this very day. Thus, it remains there throughout the years of Golus, until the third Beis HaMikdash will be built swiftly in our days. Now, perhaps we need a chiddush to try to understand this. And you know, Shlomo HaMelech intentionally hid and stored the Mishkan under the tunnels of the Heichal. Why? He says it's like analogous to a man sowing seeds in the ground to grow grain and fruit. He intended for the Mishkan built by Moshe Rabbeinu, which had supreme Kedusha and tremendous, tremendous Kavanas, to lie in the ground like some kind of roots, right? Imparting Kedusha to the Beis HaMikdash in Eretz Yisrael. So just like the roots of a tree sustain its branches and its fruit, in similar fashion, the incredible Kedusha of the Mishkan imparted Kedusha to the first and second Beis HaMikdash. And we can kind of bring a proof for this from a teaching from the Arizal, who brings that Shlema Melech was a nitzutz of Moshe Rabbeinu Alav Hashalom. Therefore, when Shlema Melech, which is a spark from the neshama of Moshe Rabbeinu, built the first Beis HaMikdash, he strived to tap into the Kedusha of Moshe Rabbeinu, to extend the Kedusha Moshe invested in the Mishkan also into the Beis HaMikdash. Right? And as it says, V'asu li mikdash v'shochanti b'socha, make me a mikdash so I can dwell amongst them. And he says that alludes to the Mishkan that was hidden beneath the two Beis HaMikdash. So in this way, we can perhaps reconcile the comment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu related to the building of the Mishkan, where it says, V'asu li mikdash, make me a mikdash so I can live among them. And regarding this pasuk, so the Sifri teaches us, wherever it says to me, li, it implies that it will exist forevermore. We're going to come back and continue the discussion after the break. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. Please stay with us.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnerb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.9 Chai FM, this is Soul to Soul, back on your radio, Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Pashas Pekudei, Tov Shin Peidal. We are talking about the Mishkan, and we said a startling idea that the Mishkan which Moshe Rabbeinu built was never ever destroyed, and it's still lying under the tunnels of the Heichal, waiting for the third Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt. And we learn it from the words where it says, V'asu li mikdash, make for me a mikdash. And the major says, wherever the Torah says the word li, it means something that's going to endure for all eternity. And the obvious question is, how can the Medrash expound the word li in our pasuk to imply that the mikdash is going to endure for all eternity? After all, the mikdash was only existing in the midbar, right? Then, when Bnei Yisrael entered Eretz Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rested his Shechinah in the Beis HaMikdash and not in the Mishkan. As explained, the Mishkan was stored away and was not used anymore. Notwithstanding, perhaps we can answer the difficulty as follows. Shlomo HaMelech hid and planted the Mishkan, so to speak, in a cave, in a cavern, beneath the Heichal, so that the Kedusha of Moshe Rabbeinu would serve as a source of Kedusha for the Beis HaMikdash. Thus, when Hashem says, V'asu li mikdash, right, that it remained in effect forever, right, in its full glory. For the Kedusha of the Shekhinah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu rested in the Mishkan was extended to the first two Beis HaMikdash and will also continue to exist in the third Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaShem will build on the same site very, very soon. So this explains, amazingly, the Gemara statements, the Gemara in Erevin, right at the very beginning, it says, we find that the Mikdash, right, is sometimes called a Mishkan. And the Mishkan is sometimes called a Mikdash. They seem to be almost interchangeable. This prompts the Gemara to ask, I understand, he says, that the Mikdash is also called a Mishkan because there's a pasuk in Vayikra that says, I will place my Mishkan in your midst. And Rashi says, when this was said, the Mishkan had already been built. Therefore, the Pasuk must be referring to the future Beis HaMikdash. But where do we find that the Mishkan is called a Mikdash? Rather, it is from there. And they shall make me v'asu li Mikdash. Right? So that I can live in their midst. In other words, nevertheless, why do we need two sort of interchangeable names? Mikdash and Mishkan. So based on what we've been discussing, the answer is actually quite straightforward. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to know that the Mishkan, which was built with this incredible level of Kedusha, to draw the presence of the Shekhinah to it, would endure forever. For, as we mentioned before, it was destined to be buried beneath the Heichal to serve as a source of Kedusha and dwelling of the Shekhinah for all future Batei Mikdash. So let's then connect this to the Pasuk of Asuli Mikdash. They shall make me a Mishkash, right, for me, that will also be called a Mikdash that's going to exist forever. And why is the Mishkan called a Mikdash, which suggests a kind of permanent location? Because that's exactly what happened. The purpose of building the Mishkan was so that I can live in their midst. And the Pasuk doesn't say in it, in the singular, but rather in their midst, among them, in the plural. From this we learn that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was destined to also rest the Shekhinah in both Batei Mikdash due to the Kedusha of the Mishkan that will be hidden and stored in a cave beneath the Heichal. And perhaps this also explains why HaKadosh Baruch Hu referred to the future Beis HaMikdash as a Mishkan, when he said, V'nosati Mishkani b'soichachem, right? He was alluding to the fact that he was destined to place the Mishkan built by Moshe Rabbeinu in the Midbar as a resting place for the Shekhinah, b'soichachem, in the two Beis HaMikdash. So perhaps now we can perhaps work maybe to dispel a certain misconception. There's a Gemara in Yuma on Daf Chof Aleph. It says one of the five things that were absent in the second Beis HaMikdash was the dwelling of the Shekhinah. It says Rabbeinu Bachaya addresses this issue in Parshas Vayigash. And he explains that the Shekhinah was most definitely present in the second Beis HaMikdash, but just not to the degree that it was in the first Beis HaMikdash. Also, it did not dwell there consistently as it did in the first Beis HaMikdash. Now, following this statement of the Rabbeinu Bachaya. So now let's go back to the opening pasuk of our parsha. Elef fukudei ha-mishkan, mishkan ha-edus asher pukar al-mi Moshe. And we introduce the explanation of the Medrash. Why is the word mishkan written twice? So Rabbi Shmuel Bar Marta said, because it was taken as collateral two times because of them, because of their averus. So let's try to explain why the Pasuk refers to the two Churbanos in terms of a Mashkan, a collateral. A collateral is an item that a lender, creditor, takes from the debtor, from the borrower, right? Which he intends to return when the latter pays off his debt. So how does this apply to the two Beis HaMikdash that were destroyed and burnt? In what way do they represent a mashkan, a collateral that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is destined to return to us? So perhaps HaKadosh Baruch Hu was alluding to us a really, really fascinating fact, which is taught us by our Chazal, where he says that there's a pasuk also in the Halukas we say every single day, it says, Boine Yerushalayim Hashem. The builder of Yerushalayim is Hashem. This Pasuk relates to the third Beis HaMikdash, right? Which Beis Hashem is going to happen very soon, that we await with great, great anticipation. Now, it's not going to be built by man, for then it will not endure, but rather by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Furthermore, the third Beis HaMikdash will incorporate both of the previous Batei Mikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash will stand upon the ground in its full glory and splendor in full view, while the first Beis HaMikdash will stand on top of it, concealed, like clouds of glory surrounding and illuminating it. That's what our Chazal tell us. Now, with this understanding, so perhaps we can say a very, very nice interpretation, right, of the continuation of that pasuk. It says, Boine Yerushalayim Hashem, Hashem is the builder of Yerushalayim, Nidche Yisrael Yechanes, the sort of the scattered ones of Klai Yisrael, he's going to gather together. This implies that the third Beis HaMikdash is going to gather in, i.e. incorporate the two Beis HaMikdash. Those are the sort of the outcasts that were built by the hands of Yisrael and were consequently destroyed. In other words, the third Beis HaMikdash is going to be all inclusive. And therefore, perhaps we can now bring another incredible insight from the great Yismach Moshe, who comments, there's a pasuk in Tehillim, Shira Mailas L'Shleima, in Kapitel Kufchav Zayin, Shira Mailas L'Shleima, Im Hashem Lo Yivne Bayis, Hashem is not going to build the Beis HaMikdash, Shav Omlu Boyne Boy, those who build it are wasting their time. They have worked in vain. Now, initially, the word Yivneh, he will build, is a future tense. Right? Whereas in the same pasuk, the word Omloi, they worked, appears to be in the past tense. So, the Yismach Moshe explains that the world was incapable and not even ready to receive the incredible Kedusha of the third Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, it was necessary to pave the way for it with the respective Kedusha of the first two Beis HaMikdash. The fact that that level of Kedusha once blessed the world will enable us to receive the incredible Kedusha of the third Beis HaMikdash. He explains, we need to address the question that troubled many of our earlier Gedolim, where the first two Beis HaMikdash that were destroyed totally for nothing, Chas V'Shalom, or did they serve some unknown purpose? Right? So he says the matter can be understood based on the following mashal. Says, a man plants seeds for an exotic tree. Once it blossoms and begins to bear fruit, he uproots the tree and in its place he plants seeds for a second tree. Once again, he waits until it bears fruit and then uproots it as well. Now, he acquires seed for a tree of indescribable quality and beauty. Right, this time, he plants it and cares for it so that it will last forever. During the uprooting of the first two beautiful, seemingly healthy trees, observers could not believe what he was doing. What's he up to? Right? And what his reasoning could have been for what he was doing. Right? The fellow himself explained to them that all of his actions were founded on a sound, well thought out plan. Even the first two trees and their uprooting were ultimately for the sake of the survival and long-term existence of the third tree. The land, however, was not initially suited to sustain a tree of that nature and quality. Therefore, a gradual process needed to be employed, preparing the ground for its ultimate purpose. Once the soil achieved the richness and quality necessary to sustain a tree that could endure forever, the third tree was planted, the tree that was intended from the very, very start. In a similar vein, HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended all along to build the third Beis HaMikdash in its indescribable brilliance, and knowing in his infinite wisdom that this physical, material world could not initially sustain such a spiritual holy structure, it was necessary to institute a gradual process involving the first two Batei Mikdash, right? And thanks to their existence and the holy Avodah that took place on their grounds over hundreds of years, the land acquired the spiritual potential and quality necessary to sustain and house the sanctity of the third Beis HaMikdash. The Maaseh Yodah, the work of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, a bias that will outshine its predecessors and, in fact, endure forever. Therefore, to give us the emunah that the third Beis HaMikdash will certainly be built, David HaMelech said, "Im Hashem lo yivne bayis." In other words, it's inconceivable that Hashem will not build the third Beis HaMikdash in the future. If not for his divine plan to build a third Beis HaMikdash in their place, right? Which is going to be more magnificent even than the first two, why did Hashem bother building and destroying the first two? Right? That would mean that the first two were actually built for nothing. No. Shavam lu baina boy. To think such a thing would be almost sacrilege and complete nonsense. Rather, we have to believe with absolute certainty and faith that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will build the third Beis HaMikdash in the near future, and that the first two Batei Mikdash served as essential preparation for its everlasting construction. Therefore, just to sum up, HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged for Shlomo HaMelech to build the first Beis HaMikdash independently, a structure with a level of Kedusha that the world was capable of receiving. Subsequently, he arranged for the building of the second Beis HaMikdash, again, independently, also something that the world was actually capable at that time of receiving. After the two of them illuminated the world with their respective incredible Kedusha, the world will be able to receive their combined illumination when the time for the future Gula is at hand. At that time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will build the third Beis HaMikdash, right, incorporating the two Batei Mikdash that already adorned the world. Unfortunately, our enemies prevailed over the wood and stones of the first two Batei Mikdash. They succeeded in burning and destroying their physical structures. Yet, just as they were incapable of exerting their powers of destruction over the physical Mishkan, Moshe's handiwork, all the more so that they were incapable of affecting the Kedusha that he imparted to the Mishkan. And since Shlomo HaMelech stored the Mishkan under the tunnels of the Heichal, right, as we said, to give its Kedusha to the two boys of Mikdash, their Kedusha remains in effect forevermore. Furthermore, they will glorify the third Beis HaMikdash that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is destined to build. And this explains incredibly a Medrash in Echa Rabbah where it says, Shem is a Mizmal Yosef, a psalm to Asaph. Elohim, Bo Goyim Menachosech, the nations have entered into your inheritance. Right? This is what they said to Asaph. HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroyed the Heichal and the Mikdash, and you are sitting around and composing songs? Asaph replied, I am rejoicing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu poured out his anger upon wooden beams and stones rather than upon Yisrael. Perhaps you can say a pshat, which is consistent with what we're saying now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu poured out his anger on the external structure of the Beis HaMikdash, which was not the handiwork of Moshe Rabbeinu, nor Hashem, the internal Kedusha, which the Beis HaMikdash, however, right, which emanated from the Mishkan that was underneath it, remained absolutely intact. So why was it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu referred to the destruction of the two Beis HaMikdash as a double collateral, a mashkan? So he's teaching us an incredible idea. He's teaching us that the Churban applied only to the physical structures, the woods and the stones of the two Beis HaMikdash. Their internal inherent Kedusha extending from the Mishkan remained thoroughly intact, like a collateral, a mashkan. Therefore, at the time of the future Geula, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will return the two collaterals with the building of the third Beis HaMikdash that will include, Be'ez Hashem, the Kedusha of both Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni. This is 101.9 Chai FM. The program is Soul to Soul. We'll be back in a moment with our Hilchos Shabbos slot.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
101.5 Chai FM. This is Soul to Soul on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh Parshas Pekudei Tov Shin Pei Dalilei. Warm welcome to those who are joining us right now at this point on the show as we begin our Hilchos Shabbos slot in the weekly show. Baruch Hashem, Zochinu, to be together, to be able to learn Torah, to be able to enhance our Shmiras Shabbos, as we always do at this point on the show, to just go through the important times and details of this coming Shabbos, Shabbos Kodesh Parshas Pekudei. So the earliest time to light your candles this afternoon is 5:07, 7 minutes past five, about 2.25 hours from now, and doable. We can definitely do it. Get everything ready, get the food ready, get ourselves bathed and dressed, get the house looking into some semblance of order, and accept upon ourselves the Shabbos and bring in the Shabbos Malka into our house and allow the tranquility and the rest and the Kedusha of Shabbos to envelop us, to envelop our children, to envelop the entire home. 5:07 is the earliest time for lighting candles. The latest time this afternoon, if you can't make 5:07, the latest time is 6:05. 5 minutes past six is the absolute latest time. And that really, as I always say, is the time we have to consider as the absolute deadline for doing whatever preparations for Shabbos need to be done. We should not be relying on those few minutes after candlelighting until sunset. Those remain set aside for extreme emergencies where a person really would not be able to get to Shabbos if not for that time. We have to regard candlelighting time 6:05 as our absolute deadline. Sunset is at 6:23, 23 minutes past 6. That is the absolute deadline, even for people in a crisis situation, 6:23. And therefore, if you want to be able to daven Ma'ariv and say Krishma in the correct time, all you have to do is wait till 6:41. I'm sure most shuls will be davening Ma'ariv only after that time. So therefore, you can already fulfill the Torah mitzvah of saying Krishma at night, and you won't need to repeat it again later in the evening before the Suda or after the Suda, whatever your kind of custom was during the summer months where you were davening too early and had to repeat the Krishma. We're now basically in the mode for the next good number of months where we'll be able to daven almost certainly on Friday night, daven in the correct time and be able to say the Krishma as we should say it. And then of course we can sit down to a beautiful, beautiful Shabbos Seuda. This is the kind of the Shabbos in between. Last week is Parsha Shkolim. Next week will be Parsha Zohar, the intro and the sort of the springboard into Purim. So this is like the little oasis perhaps before the main onslaught of the beautiful, beautiful Chag of Purim. Tomorrow, of course, is Shabbos Parshas Pekudei, which of course is the Shabbos of Chazak, V'nis Chazak. We're going to finish, make a siyum on Sefer Shemois, the second book of the Torah, and whatever your shul does to celebrate a siyum, we'll be doing that. And of course, there's the normal Haftarah for Parshas Pekudei. It also doesn't get read too often. Usually Vayakal Pekudei goes together, and often it's one of the four special readings around Chodesh Adar. So we have a special Haftarah that we can actually get to read. And the Shabbos then carries on as it should. And the Shabbos will end, Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow night at 6:54. 6:54 is the end of Shabbos, and then we enter into the week before Purim. Of course, as I mentioned, next Shabbos is going to be Parshas Zohar, preceded on Thursday by Ta'anit Esther. Although, of course, usually Ta'anit Esther comes on the day before Purim, but of course, since Purim is on Sunday and the day before Purim is then Shabbos, and of course, except for Yom Kippur, we never fast on Shabbos. And we really prefer not to fast on Friday if we have the choice. Therefore, Ta'anit Esther is moved forward to Thursday, and then Shabbos will be Parshas Zohar, and then Moitzei Shabbos, of course, is Purim. We'll read the Megillah straight after Shabbos, and then enter into the Purim festivities. We are still learning the laws of food preparation on Shabbos. And we're learning today that our Chazal, our rabbis, have forbade us to sort of to melt a snow, right, or hail, or ice, in order to make them into water. If you want to melt them for the purpose of making them into water, that you're not allowed to do. Why? Because the crushing of it and the making it into a liquid looks like a melacha, looks like a gainful activity on Shabbos, because you are actually creating out of the ice or out of the hail, you're creating a water, and that looks like a melacha. But what you can do, so I can take an ice cube or pieces of ice and I can put them into water, and the ice will then melt by itself and make the water cold. That I'm allowed to do, because since you're not actually actively doing something that looks like you're actively going and melting the ice, so there's no prohibition in that. And that comes from the Gemara, Daf Nalef and Shabbos says that. Similarly, you're allowed to sort of break ice in order to put it, let's say, in a cup or in a jug, so you can have ice water, in spite of the fact that as you're breaking it, that in itself might very well cause some water to come out. Still, it's not forbidden because, again, you're not breaking it in order to get water out of the ice. You're just breaking it in order to be able to fit it into a glass or a jug. And that is not forbidden on Shabbos. Similarly, you'd be allowed to walk. If it's snowing, you're allowed to walk on the snow, even though it's inevitable. And of course, as you're walking, so a little bit of the snow is going to melt. And again, because that is not at all your intention, you have no kavana to do that, and therefore it's completely mutar, as the Shulchan Aruch says in Simen Shin Chaf. Now, according to some of the Rishonim, including the Rosh, the reason why it is forbidden to sort of squeeze and melt ice, and then to turn it into water, is because you are creating actually something new. It was a solid substance, it was ice, and now I'm actually creating a new thing called water, right? Because I've taken something that's frozen and I've turned it into a liquid. Therefore, according to their opinion, it would be forbidden also, let's say if I have a congealed piece of food. So if I'm going to heat that up and turn, let's say the gel or the gravy that's now congealed, turn that into a liquid, according to them, that would also be forbidden because I'm creating something anew. But however, most of the poskim say, as we said, that the reason why it's forbidden to squeeze and actively go and melt snow or hail is not because you're creating something new, but because, as I said, the melting of the snow looks, you're actually doing it with your hands, and that looks like it's very similar to the activity of squeezing a fruit. And therefore, according to the opinion of most of these poskim, you're allowed, let's say, to take your congealed, your chicken that has a bit of congealed gravy on it, and turn that into a liquid through a sort of a roundabout activity of heating it. And that's how many of the Rishon, the Ramban, the Rashba, all hold that way. And in fact, some, the Sfarim, do seem to be lenient in that area. But according to the minig of us Ashkenazim, so l'chatchila, one should be strict not to even take something that is congealed and turn it into a liquid through the usage of heat. However, if it's absolutely necessary and you can't avoid doing it, so then perhaps one would be allowed to be lenient, as the Shulchan Aruch in Shin Yurches, Sibtesvav, points out. This is 101.9 Chai FM, soul to soul. We'll be back in a moment because this is the greatest Jewish radio station in all of Africa.
This is Hilchos Shabbos with Rabbi Moshe Schnurb, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is Zol to Zol, back on your radio. Erev Shabbos Kodesh, Pashas Pekudei, Tav Shin Pei Dalet. We are talking about, we spoke on, until now, about melting ice into water. What about the other way around? What about freezing water in order to make ice out of it? So again, the Sfarim say it's permitted, but the minig of the Ashkenazim, most people are a machmir, certainly in a lechatchila situation, not to prepare ice on Shabbos. Again, if it's really, really excruciatingly hot, so then the Shmei Shabbos Kechosa says you'd be allowed to make ice in that situation. Now, there are, however, some of the Ashkenazi poiskim that are lenient, even the chatkila, to prepare ice on, let's say, a day that's not so hot, because they say the ice is not going to sort of exist in a sort of independent fashion, like a solid. And as soon as you take it out of the freezer, it's going to turn back. So when is it forbidden to create something when that's a permanent situation that's going to remain in that situation? Well, I take it out of the freezer, straight away, it's going to go back to being liquid. So therefore, I didn't actually create something new. And that's the leniency of the tzitz Eliezer. So there are some that do in fact allow it. Now, you're allowed to put spices, which of course adds taste or add smell into food, even though, again, we said you cannot create a smell in clothing. There's no prohibition to create a smell in food. And that's the Shulchan Aruch in Tavkuf Aleph and the Mishnah Berurah there. And lastly, according to many of the poskim, one is not allowed to sort of whip up an egg white into a foam or kind of make a frothy kind of thing, because that again is it looks like you're preparing it to cook it, based on the Gemara in Kuftes in Shabbos and the Mishnah Berurah in Shulchan Aruch. Again, there are leniencies, but generally, one should try to be strict. Okay, we're going to stop here. We'll, please God, carry on next week. Next week, we'll be talking primarily about Purim. Most of our Torah will be about Purim, not necessarily Purim Torah, it'll be real Torah, but having to do with the subject of Purim. Now, it's just left me to thank each and every one of you for taking the time to open your devices, open your hearts and your minds to hopefully learn something, to be inspired by something. And please God, Kadosh Baruch Hu should grant us all a Shabbos full of menucha, full of rest, full of tranquility, full of love, full of happiness, full of Torah, and full of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To all of our radio family, a good Kabbalistic Shabbos.